and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful.
Oh. And wires that we call the internets is Joe Ryder. How you doing today, Joe?
Well, I was going to spend an hour talking about whether or not Green Lantern could create a glass and then drink Mountain Dew out of it. Because this morning I had my Target special Green Lantern glass with Mountain Dew in it. But I understand we have a special guest. Special guest, come up to the microphone and identify yourself.
Special guest, I think they're talking about the other guy in the other room. No. Hey guys, it's Tori Quella, owner of Twin Cities Comics. I've been asked to be on the show today for many different reasons, none of which I can actually fulfill. I'm not a special guest. I'm not known. I don't know too much about comics. Kidding. But I'm here to be some comedic.
Let's interludes start with today. This. What is your secret comic book origin? In other words, what is the first comic that got you hooked?
My first comic that got me hooked was Transformers. It was the three-pack that I got from a local shop back in the 80s. You remember when they had the three-pack of the Transformers 1, 2, and 3 on the spinner racks? And I was a huge Transformers geek in the 80s, and that's kind of what got me hooked on comics.
Till all are one. He's one of us, Corey.
That's right.
Now, here's my question. When did you become the owner of Twin City Comics?
Well, I actually took over the name when the old Twin Cities Comics kind of fell off the wayside because I used to be under Twin Cities Auctions. I sold and bought and sold comics for years and years and years on the side, and that's how I got to know a lot of the people here in the Twin Cities in the comic book scene. And four years ago, when Twin Cities Comics had been gone for a little while, I decided to see if the name was available because it was more of what I did and it was available. So I kind of took it over. And unusual business, though, because I'm not an actual comic book shop in the typical sense. But every now and then I still get people that, you know, wonder if I'm the old Twin Cities Comics. But no, that's
not me. Let me give you some trivia, though. Who was the original Twin City Comics?
Well, I don't know. Remember, I'm not originally from the Twin Cities. I'm from the land of beer and cheese next door.
Well, we won't hold that against you.
You should.
Have you ever gone to Dreamhaven Books?
I have.
Greg Ketter's first shop was Twin City Comics way back when on Dale Front and Comal. Jay, who started Twin City Comics back when it was across from the Heights Theater. And then I think somehow Granite City bought in or did something with them. Jay Johnson owned it for a while, and then he sold it to whoever put it out of business, I guess. I don't know who the people are, so I don't have to be delicate about it. But now we know that it's you. You are the one. So there's no real continuity between the old Twin City Comics and you, in case people ask.
Yeah, technically Twin Cities Comics, so it was a little bit of a change, but... I think it had a little bit to do with just the fact that when I started my quote unquote business on the side, I was just slinging comic books, and when I actually became a full time business, I figured I needed a little bit of legitimacy. And somebody brought up that name, and I'm like, well, actually, that used to be an old comic shop, but I think they're out of business. So let me look up, and sure enough, it was available. So I kind of took it over. So kind of like typical of Marvel and DC, sometimes, you know, continuity doesn't really matter.
And typical of Marvel, if the name's been abandoned, we got to take it.
Absolutely.
Now, you used to shop at my store.
I did. That's how we met.
St. Paul. Now, I don't have any tales from the shop anymore because I think I've done it all. But tell me your impression of... were you with us when it was Hot Comics East or when we were Hot Comics St. Paul, or didn't it even matter?
Oh, God, I don't remember that far back. I can't remember what I had for breakfast.
The little store was like Hot Comics East, and then we went into the big 3,000-square-foot store. Yep. And that was the one that I ended up selling back to Brian, the founder of Hot Comics, years ago. Yep. But how did you find us?
Oh, No, I don't remember exactly, but I was working in Roseville at the time, and I don't remember if I was looking for a specific book, and I used to go to the Shinders in Roseville, and they didn't have it or something, and I think that's how I found you. I actually found you through a guy that I used to work with who went into your shop as well, a guy named Jerry. So I think he was actually the one that referred me over to check you guys out.
Oh, sweet. We'll have to find Jerry and give him a Joe prize.
There you go.
Now, you have a very unique business model, and I've raved about it before on past showcases, but tell people it has to do with signatures, comics, mm-hmm. and grading. So explain to the people what you do.
So when I first got back into comics, you know, there's always a little bit of a lull in some people's collecting and something brings you back. And I got back into comics in 1999. It was right before CGC came about. And when CGC came about, I had a friend that was into grading comic books. He knew one of the guys that was a grader with them back when they were in, I think it was New Jersey. And I started basically buying and selling books, and I bought this collection of Silver Age stuff. I figured, well, you know what? I'm going to give this grading a try. And I sent some stuff to CGC, ended up becoming a dealer. From there, I started basically dealing just in high-grade moderns. And when they came out with their Signature Series program, I actually started... This was back in 2004. I started looking into being a Signature Series dealer because I personally like to get my own comic book signed. You know, I remember going to the old Thunderbird Hotel and getting things signed. And I figured, well, there's really nobody in this area that did that. So, you know, find a need and fill a need. And that's kind of what I did. So I became a Signature Series facilitator through CGC. And I really only dealt with, you know, comic book creators at first, and sometime around 2009 or 2010, and really kind of a lot of it was due to the Marvel movies and some of the adaptations of different comic books that were going on TV. People started asking me when I'd go to a convention, hey, can you get something signed by this actor? And I said, yeah, that's fine. I can do that. And it kind of it just morphed into that, where I became known as the person that, you know, dealt with celebrity signed memorabilia on the comic book side. From that point, it took off and people started asking me to send in posters. And you know, now the big thing is Funko Pops. We've dealt with pretty much everything from trading cards all the way up to full size Captain America shields. So I have people from all over the world that will send me items to get signed by different celebrities or different comic creators. And we get those things signed. We get them authenticated, whether through CGC as a comic book or other third-party authentication companies. If it's just a piece of memorabilia, get it back out to the customers. And, you know, nobody's the wiser that I get to hang around with, you know, comic creators and celebrities on a weekly basis. If you would have told me I would have been doing this as a kid, I would have said you're nuts.
So before we get any further, go ahead, drop websites, eBay sites. How can somebody get a hold of you to either see what you got or maybe send you something for a signature?
Yeah, so on eBay, we're Twin Cities Comics. So just ebay.com, I think it's /STR is a store, /Twin Cities Comics. TwinCitiesComics.com. If you look us up on Facebook, it's Twin Cities Comics. So we keep it pretty simple. So you can go on to any of our social media and see what kind of signings that we have coming up. Most of our stuff in the past has been at conventions. Now with conventions being, you know, kind of on hold for the foreseeable future, we're doing a lot of private signings. So you can go on there, see what signings we have coming up. And then if there's anything that we got extra from some of our signings, we do sell some of that stuff on eBay.
Now, when you do a signing, is it something you negotiate with the agent to do? Or I know I ran into you once you were going to England, weren't you, for a signing?
Yeah, I was heading to England and I signed with Benedict Cumberbatch. So for that one and for a lot of the convention signings, we either work directly with the convention or we work with the agent and setting up something. At a convention, it's a little bit different because, you know, the celebrity is already going to be there. we tell them that we've got, you know, 100, 200 items to be signed. A lot of times we'll get set up in the back room and they'll have a special area for us to, you know, get all of our stuff set up. When the talent or when, you know, one of the comic creators or whatever has a little bit of break, they'll come back there, sign everything, then they go back out on the floor. So those ones are a little bit easier. But when we're doing a private signing, it can be through an agent, it can be through a lawyer. We've teamed up with a couple of different companies where we will do the comic book side and they may do the memorabilia side, like posters and trading cards and things like that. So I get approached quite a bit by people that are doing other signings that want to have a CGC witness present, and we're able to facilitate that for them.
So now it's not, I mean, you're not like getting sweetheart deals here. I mean, you're giving this guy a piece of the action, right?
Yeah. So for instance, if we go to a convention and let's say an artist is charging $20, you know, for a signature, we add on $5, you know, so we're not getting rich off of each item or anything like that. Generally speaking, for a celebrity, if they're charging $100, we're charging $125. If it's something like a shield, we might charge a little bit more because obviously it's a little bit more of a hassle to get it there. When we're doing the private signings, it's a little bit more because we have to rent out a ballroom. We have to have everything sent off via pallets. We have to rent security because we have to have security at some of these signings. So when it's a private signing, there's a little bit more entailed on it. But yeah, they get a large cut of the action. So I'd say majority of them, though, if we're at a convention, you know, we're charging anywhere from $5 to $25. And if you think about it, if somebody's in, you know, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and we're going to New York Comic Con, number one, could that person even get in there? And if they couldn't, or even if they could, they're saving a lot of money if they're charging, or we're charging them $25 to get something signed, where they don't have to go, they don't have to pay for a hotel room, they don't have to pay to get in, they don't have to pay, you know, an airfare, etc. So
who are the celebrities you have, or even some of the comic artists, who was like on the high end? Who did you have to like pay a premium to go see?
Arnold Schwarzenegger, his signature alone was $500. That was our cost. You know, so there's some spendy ones. Most of the Marvel people right now that you consider kind of A-list celebrities, even at a convention, they're charging anywhere from $175 to $225. But then you look at other people like your cast for Smallville, or your cast from Arrow, or your cast from a lot of the CW shows or things like that. They're anywhere from $40 to $60. So there's a lot of those mid-tier celebrities. And then for some of your comic creators, you know, depending on what somebody wants signed, if you've got a hardcover, a lot of the guys don't charge anything for it. It's become a little bit different than the last couple of years where the CGC part of it, there's basically, if you want a comic book signed and it's not being graded, maybe it's the first two for free or the first five free or whatever. But if it's a CGC comic, maybe they're charging $5 or $10. So it kind of runs the gamut, you know. And then, of course, you had Stan Lee when he was still alive. You know, he started at, I think, 60, and then at one point he was 80. Towards the end of his life, I think he was charging $100 at conventions. So it runs the gamut.
Hold on, Joe.
Okay.
So hardcovers, they don't charge for. So Joe and I could give you our omnibuses.
Yes, many of them.
Here's a pallet of omnibuses to get signed.
I've had people before that have given me, I think it was one of the last signings I did with Stan Lee, a guy had 10 omnibuses. We do charge a little bit of a premium because those are a pain in the butt to get there, but we also had to have those, and you know, I can't take them on a plane with me, so he had to send them to our hotel in the location that we were staying. We then, you know, from the hotel, brought them over to where we were signing with Stan, got them signed, and then we actually shipped them right back to him. So there's some logistics that go into some of them. Comics, Funkos, 8x10s, trading cards, those things are easy. I mean, real easy. You start wanting to send a shield somewhere, you know, then you're, yeah, a little different. We actually had some swords that were signed by Kit Harington, and we had some swords that were signed by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Those are things that people can't even bring into a convention themselves just because they're a weapon, you know. There's some logistics involved.
I want to ask more about the CGC part. CGC, they started mid-90s, I think. And it was soon after the Overstreet grading guide came out. And the Overstreet grading guide was, at the time, incredibly controversial.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people felt that they were too light on their grading. Some people thought they were too harsh on their grading. I worked at Schindler's when that thing came out. And the second day it was out, we were told to pull them all because they didn't want people using it for their books when they would come in to sell stuff to Schindler's. So how has there been kind of this leveled playing field where everyone finally agrees on the grading? Joe could probably tell more stories about it, but as a kid in the 70s, I would mail away for something and something would be near mint, and you know, you could see some, you know, some bumps on the corners and stuff, or you could mail away for something that's good and it looked almost as good as the new mint from Mile High, depending on where you got it from. How did CGC kind of say, okay, here's the definitions?
Well, there's still controversy, because my definition of a very fine on a book and your definition of a very fine on that same book, maybe I think it's, you know, an 8.0 and you think it's an 8.5. Now, that still happens. It still happens with CGC as well. What they've basically done is they've adopted guidelines. You know, this isn't a science, unfortunately. It's not a, hey, something measures 2.2 on a scale, or it measures 2.3 on a scale, because it's still a human being looking at it, so there is some subjectivity. But what it basically did is said this, is you now have a third party that's looking at a book that doesn't have a vested interest in the buying or selling of it. So, for instance, if I'm a seller and I say, hey, this is a 5, and the buyer says, no, I think it's a 4, now you have somebody that's coming in and saying, hey, you're both wrong, it's a 4.5, or it's a 5, or it's a 4, or whatever the grade might be. And it there's still some controversy, because there's some people that say, well, you know what, depending on the grader, you know, how does the grader feel that day, or is it a different grader? There's still going to be that subjectivity where if I think it's a 4.5 and somebody thinks it's a 5, it all depends on who's looking at it. But what it does is it basically gives at least somebody, especially with the advent of eBay, a little bit of a boost to, hey, I think that this is right. Because if an independent third party is saying that this is a very fine, I can be relatively, you know, certain that it's going to be close. And if I get it back and I don't really agree with it, well, you can't blame the seller anymore, you know, because we all know that there's sellers that, you know, hey, I'm going to try to get a couple extra bucks out of this person by, overgrading it. That's really what they did, is they kind of took that out of the playing field. So when you send something in, you say, hey, it's no longer me versus you, and we're battling back on what this grade is. Now we have somebody else telling us what they think it is, and you can either agree with it or you don't. If you don't, you still don't have to buy it.
Corey, if you get a chance, go to eBay right now and look at Twin City Comics.
Okay. And,
I mean, I could spend the rest of the podcast just asking you questions about some of the amazing stuff you got there. I mean, you've got Scarface Comics signed by Al Pacino.
Yep.
I mean, it would never occur to me. Well, I suppose now I see the number one with his photo to have him sign it. I mean, these are things. I remember talking with Corey, I think before I actually knew you were doing this. Like, this is kind of an interesting thing. I mean, how many comics do I want to keep with me at the airport in case I hear one of these guys comes traipsing through? Mm-hmm. You got, like, Samuel L. Jackson. You've got, it looks like the cast of Justice League signed a blank cover.
Yeah, I also have a photo cover. I think I have two photo covers.
Oh, I've just
Justice League 21 and Justice League 15, and it's signed by the main six.
Gene Hackman signing a Lex Luthor unauthorized biography. How did that come about? And what did Gene think about when you handed this to him to sign it?
So for that one, I wasn't at the signing. I had one of my witnesses at the signing, and that was out in LA. So I don't know specifically about him and what he felt, but you know, what I can tell you is that I'm the only person that got any of those signed. So the nice thing is that when it comes, you know, to a Lex Luthor comic book, if there's any Lex Luthor comic books that have been signed by Gene Hackman in the world that are graded by CGC, I'm the guy that did them.
Well, even below, there's John Cleese, Superman True Brit.
That was a great one. He basically did a little bit of the story in the foreword in that. I had nothing else to get signed by John Cleese when I met him in London a couple years ago, except what I did do is I brought a Black Knight one, and I had him sign it. It's just a flesh wound, you know, from the old Monty Python, because I didn't have anything else to sign. So I figured, hey, you know, whatever, that's for me. But I looked it up, and I remember John Cleese having to do something with a comic book. I couldn't remember what it was, and I did some searching, and I'm like, oh, this is it. You know, like, what if Superman had been in, you know, the UK or whatever? So, yeah, I think I got two or three of those signed, and I still have one of those left. So, yeah, some of these guys, it's interesting because they would never think of you getting something like this signed by them. So, yeah.
Or if they are even aware that they were, like, on the cover or something.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, I think, in the last, I'd say, 7 or 8 years, is that, for instance, when Tom Holland was cast as Spider-Man, he's now the third Spider-Man in the last 10 years or whatever, and who's going to want to put him on an AF-15? Well, nobody, because they could recast him down the road. But they came out and they did photo covers for these guys. So now you have something that actually makes sense for the actor to sign if you're into CGC Comics. You know, the blank covers are good as well, but if you can get a photo cover of him, that's great. They've done photo covers for a lot of the major MCU and DC cast. They've done them for John Wick, so you've got a Keanu Reeves one out there. You've got them for Stargate, Atlantis. You got them for a lot of different comic books out there. So if you're into signatures, if you're into comic books, and if you like the celebrities, it kind of brings everything all into one.
Well, the other thing, too, is they're all authenticated, which is correct. A big thing now in autograph field, because so many have been forged. You can't even be certain that the certificate of authenticity is authentic. But with CGC, you kind of take that away. I know here's X-Men movie prequel. I'm just looking down the list by Anna Paquin.
Yep. Paquin? Yep. Yep, who played Rogue, and that's a photo cover.
You know it's her signature, which has got to be a godsend for somebody who's, you know, I mean, there's some serious dollars being spent here, but some of that, I'm like, I'm looking at the Samuel Jackson one. I'm like, damn.
Yeah, so here's the thing.
Corey, we got to get that Snakes on a Plane done. There you go.
I do have two pages of original art from the comic Snakes on a Plane.
You know what? It was funny enough is that when we signed with Jackson in 2018, a production company are going to be putting Sam Jackson in your production. You're putting Sam Jackson as Sam Jackson. It doesn't matter what he plays. You know, when he walked into there, you know, every other word was, you know, F-bomb and stuff like that, because that's who he was. I mean, just a delightful guy, but, you know, that's Sam Jackson. So it's not Sam Jackson playing somebody. It's Sam Jackson playing somebody as Sam Jackson. It's pretty funny. But Corey, getting back to what you said about certificates of authenticity, a certificate of authenticity is garbage in most situations, because if somebody actually forged a signature on an 8x10 or a poster or whatever, they can forge a certificate of authenticity. In fact, there are, this is a pretty elaborate one, where they do what's called a limited edition of 50 cast sign posters at these premieres. They've never been signed. I talked to Stan Lee's manager when he was still alive, and they supposedly had 50 of these things signed by the whole cast. I asked him if that happened. He goes, that never happened. And on the back, they've got holograms that are individually numbered up to 50. Well, you can go on Alibaba right now and get whatever you want printed off as a hologram for $200. So these guys get very, very elaborate. And in fact, I think it was, I can't remember what it was called, but they did FBI did a thing where they suggested that 90% of A-list celebrity signatures on eBay are fake. So if you don't have something that's authenticated by, you know, Beckett, by JSA, by CGC, by CBCS, by one of these companies that's an independent third party, don't buy it. Don't buy it. Because here's the other thing. A lot of people are like, well, I want photo proof. What that is that's a picture of that person supposedly signing it. Now, that's one thing if it's a very unique item, like if you got your own item and it was a one-of-a-kind sign, that's fine. But photo proof has been shown to be inaccurate, too, because I could take a picture of Samuel L. Jackson signing an 8x10, and then I could go out and reproduce that, and when I put it on eBay, the same picture is used 50 times. Okay, so photo proof means nothing. So unless you have somebody that's a third party that's authenticating these things, you really got to watch out. And that's the nice thing about CGC is they will only certify something if they physically witnessed it. It's almost like a notary service. You know, I saw the pen to the paper. Same thing with JSA and Beckett. They have their regular opinion-based ones, but if you have a witnessed authentication, it means they were there, they saw it, that item never left their possession, they put the sticker on it, boom, you're done, and you know it's real.
Now I'm going to let's get into some geekiness. I mean, this is you see this on talk shows where they talk to the host and they say, who's your favorite celebrity? Who's the worst? I want to get into that geekiness because sure. I'm looking at these and I'm just like, oh my God, looking at your website, or at least the eBay thing is almost as much fun as I think trying to get these signatures. Who was the most delightful person you've ever encountered?
Michael J. Fox, hands down. I've met him numerous times. The first time that I ever met with him to do a signing was 2015. I was out in New York. He was a delight. The guy was very gracious. It was just, I can't explain it, especially as a child of the 80s. Of course, I'm a fan of Back to the Future, but even Family Ties, man, I was an Alex B. Keaton fan, you know, type thing. So when I got to meet him, I've never really been one to, fanboy out or geek out over somebody or get starstruck. But I got to say that was a pretty fun moment for me. And one of the things which was funny from that one in 2015 is we all know that he has Parkinson's, and he's actually got really good about kind of incorporating his movement into his signature, and he gives a very consistent signature. And in the middle of one of his signatures, I think it was on a poster, he kind of had a little bit of a hiccup, I guess you could say, and he stopped. He goes, whoops, I screwed that one up. I think I signed that one Michael Jordan. Somebody's going to get a treat. So I was sitting there. Everybody started laughing. Well, we just signed with him again this past March, March 6th, out in New York again, and he starts talking about the coronavirus. And this was really when COVID-19 was getting, you know, a lot of attention. And we had, I don't know how many hundreds of things in this room. And he looks out, he goes, you know, the funny thing is I could be signing these and I might be sick and we could be sending, you know, the coronavirus all over the world. And somebody kind of stops and was like, well, what? And he's like, no, I'm just kidding. I don't have the coronavirus. But I tell you what, back in college, I had the Dos Equis virus at least two or three times. So, I mean, the guy was just great. I mean, I can say without a doubt that my favorite celebrity that I've ever met is him.
Now, on the other end.
And again, I'm not going to tell you.
I was going to say, professionally, yeah, you really can't say because you may have to deal with this person again. When we meet in private, I'll ask you again.
When somebody passes away that I really couldn't stand, I can let you know. But here's the thing. Realize that these people, they're still people. And there's been times where I've had signings with people where the first time went fine. They were nice. They were in a good mood. And then I've had another signing with the same person, and maybe they just had a bad day, but they were just not, you know, they weren't attentive, they weren't engaging with the fans, you know, they weren't, you know, whatever. So, you know, realize that we're all still human, and they have good days and they have bad days as well. There is one guy that I won't say, but I was just like, when I signed with him the first time, I gave him the benefit of the doubt. The second time that I ever got some stuff fine with him, he was the same way. And I was just sitting here thinking, you know what? If you don't want to be here, don't be here. If you're just here for a paycheck, then guess what? You're an actor. Act like it. So anyways, but yeah, I digress.
Are there any holy grails, people you would love to get on a comic book that you haven't been able to get? Or I call it like the Steve Ditko effect, where they're just not going to go to a con, or they're not going to go to a signing. They're just not into it.
Okay, so Ditko is one. When I first met John Byrne, I thought that was great. He wouldn't sign for CGC. He would sign, but he wouldn't let any grading companies certify his signature, which is a different discussion altogether. But that was one that people never thought was going to be out on a convention circuit. And he did a couple of conventions, a couple of years ago. When it comes to celebrities, since I just signed with Michael Keaton last year, I would love to get some stuff signed by Jack Nicholson, because I got a bunch of, Batman stuff signed by Keaton, and God, to get him on it would just be amazing. But I doubt that he'll ever do anything, public.
I'll tell
or
private. You, there was a gentleman in town, and years ago, I think he passed away, but he had a massive signature collection, and he talked about getting Jack Nicholson's signature through Jack Nicholson's aunt, and the aunt said very upfront, Jack will do what Jack wants. Mm-hmm. So no guarantee I'm going to get it for you. Well, about 5 years later, it showed up. He got a nice autographed photo, the classic 8x10 from Jack.
Yep.
And I can see what you mean. You almost like if you ran into him with a. Now that's the other question. Everything you do is through production company, signed ahead of time. You don't do ambush autographs.
No, I don't. For two reasons. Number one is that everything that we touch, we want to be able to have the option to get it authenticated. So for every signing that we're at, we have a CGC witness there. For most of our signings, we will have another witness from either JSA or Beckett there as well, so that we can get those certified. Now, if it's a real small signing, maybe we don't have that ability. But I don't do the in-person graphing. I don't have anything against the guys that do that. I have something against the guys that are pushy about it and, treat celebrities like their own little gravy train. But I've got some friends that get, in-person stuff at hotels and airports and things like that. And you know what? As long as you're, nice about it and realize that if they're going to sign, they're going to sign. And if they're not, they're not. And don't get upset about it. I got no problem with that. But no, we don't do that. And for CGC, they don't even allow that. For CGC, everything has to be approved beforehand. So, for instance, if I'm going to be having a signing, I get it okayed through CGC. I'm going to be there. This is the witness. These are the dates. If there's a change of the dates, we let them know. But I'm not just going to go up to see somebody at a restaurant if somebody's here in the Twin Cities and I happen to have a book in my back pocket and get it signed. No, we don't do that.
I have a quick question. I'm looking through on the eBay. There's Al Pacino has signed an issue of Scarface.
Yep.
And I would imagine that he didn't even know there was a Scarface comic.
He did not.
Do you have any good stories about celebrities who see a comic and go, what is this? I didn't know I was in a comic.
I think a couple of them have said that before. I can't remember right offhand, but I know that I've had that question before. But I've had that just with other things as well. When some of these celebrities would go to a convention, and let's say it's their first signing, they don't realize what kind of stuff is out there. Some of these guys are older. They have no idea what a Funko Pop is. Some of these guys out there didn't realize that there's trading cards of their characters from different shows. They don't know. These guys know that there's movie posters, but other than that, a lot of them really don't know what's out there. So it's happened more than once. I can't, think of anything specifically, but, I guarantee Pacino didn't know that.
How about in the comic artists? Are there, not with necessarily the bad guy, but are there any golden, how did I say it? The golden grail, the holy grails that you have not been able to get that you would love to get?
The one would be Neil Gaiman. I know that he used to do some signings years ago here in the Twin Cities. And they used to, I don't know if it was a send-in or how exactly it worked, but I know that he used to do some stuff.
Tell you how that worked.
Yeah, well, because he used to live in Wisconsin, correct?
And yeah. Greg Ketter was his first book publisher.
Oh, okay.
And he and Greg Ketter are still very close friends. Mm-hmm. So whenever Neil has a book coming out from anyone, you go to Dreamhaven, he's got autographed copies there. Neil autographed stuff for Dreamhaven.
Correct.
Well, also, if you follow his Twitter, if he's in an airport and they've got books of his at the news, at the newsstand or whatever, he'll sign them all.
Yeah. Yeah. For us, I mean, I could do that as a fan. I'm talking about more as a business. We'd have to get something set down because we'd have to have a ton of stuff. The other person is Alan Moore. Obviously, Alan has a beef with DC anyways, so I'm not going to get any of his Watchmen stuff, you know, signed. But yeah, there's other stuff that, you know, I'd love to meet Alan Moore. I can say that one of my favorite interactions, and really wasn't a comic book necessarily, but became a comic book, is when I got to meet George R. R. Martin at San Diego. I actually had a fairly large signing with him there. That had to be 4 years ago already. And that guy was just amazing. He was super nice. And then the other person, obviously, if you've ever met him, anybody who's met Stan Lee, just being in Stan Lee's presence was one thing. I got to, you know, hang out with him and his manager on numerous occasions. I got to be at Stan's house for a signing before. So those kind of things, you know, I, as a fan, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this. You know, if you would have told me, like I said, you know, as a teenager that I would get to meet Stan Lee, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, you're nuts. So, you know, there are some definite ones out there that I've signed with that have been kind of, just looking back as a fan, have been amazing.
Now, I always talk about, for a while, I had a collection of signatures that were not comic book people that I, and you know me, I sell stuff. I just, and then I regret. For example, I had a Powdered Toast Man that was signed by Gary Owens.
Okay.
Oh my God. Why I sold that, I don't know. Have you ever had something that you either personally or through your business, you sold, and then you're thinking later on, geez, I wish I didn't sell that?
Yes. The first book that I ever regret selling was my Spider-Man 129. I was in college and I needed some money. And looking back now, what I know, it was probably at least a 9.6. I wish I'd kept it. The other ones is, I can't tell you how many copies of The Walking Dead number one that I had when it first came out. And I remember selling those for $30 a pop, you know, graded, you know, CGC 9.8s. Nobody knew what was going to happen to that book. So yeah, the personal side, the 129, on the business side, you know, The Walking Dead number one.
I show that you've got a Margot Robbie signing coming up. And yep. I was wondering, with COVID-19 and everything, has that put a huge dent in what you do? And much like comic shops and other businesses that we cover, what have you done to kind of keep yourself afloat during this pandemic?
So the bulk of my business in the last couple of years has really been at conventions. If I can go to a convention and sign with 7, 8, 9 different people, or for instance, when I would go to Star Wars Celebration and I could sign with 40 different people, I'm able to, you know, click on, you know, a ton of business all at once. And my personal costs are a lot lower because I'm already going to be there. So that is basically gone. That's dried up. So that has really affected it. The private signings seem to be kind of on the uptick a little bit. We were supposed to sign with Ewan McGregor in March at a convention, and that got canceled, obviously. And that was the first large private signing that we ended up having. Definitely different because, you know, you have to be socially distant. We couldn't have as many people in the room. Things went a little bit slower, but it still happened. We got it taken care of. Everybody wore masks. For that one, we wore gloves. And it went pretty well. The Margot Robbie one is going to be the same thing. You know, we won't be able to have as many people as we would normally have there at a signing that of that size. But, you know, it at least is getting us some of the stuff that we would have normally done. And it's actually allowing us to get some of the people that maybe wouldn't do conventions, but they're like, right now, well, I got nothing to do. I've been offered a signing, and maybe this is the time to take it. Because some of the people that that have done some of the signings here in the past couple months have never done one before, and maybe it's just because they're sitting at home doing nothing as well.
Okay. I'm a person at home. I've got a copy of Condor Man from Whitman that has Michael Crawford on the cover. How would I get you to get his signature?
Okay, so here's the kicker. There are people that contact us all the time. Hey, you know what? I'd love to get this signed. Can you get something set up? The problem is that unless you have somebody that you know is going to have enough demand to do a signing, it's never going to happen. Because while Michael Crawford might be your holy grail, how many other people are going to have something to get signed by him? If it's only, you know, 50 people, it's not going to be worth it for somebody to get something done, especially if you have to go to where they live, if you have to bring two witnesses and you have to pay for them, etc. So while there's a lot of people out there that we'd love to do signings, unless he was at a convention where we're going to already be and we can get something signed, somebody like that's going to be hard to get done. So go ahead.
You're saying my Count Ducula number 8 with Geraldo Rivera on it is
probably not going to happen. No, I don't think Geraldo is going to be doing any comic conventions either. So
someday.
You know, but someday. If he does, you know, that's the kind of thing. So what we do is when we go to a convention, we kind of leave it as carte blanche. Hey, guys, we're going to be going to XYZ convention. You know, the one that we still have potentially on our books is London Film and Comic Con in November. So if you look at their convention list, you can see what people are there. And we just tell people, hey, if we're going there, all you got to do is contact us. Let us know. I want to get something signed by this person. This is what I want to get signed. Can you take care of it for me? And we either answer yes, we can, or no, we can't. So if you want to get a comic book signed by anybody there, that's not a problem. If you want us to get a knife signed somewhere there, probably not going to happen because I'm not going through TSA with a knife and, you know, dealing with guys like you. So
we're humorless.
So that's the thing is, you know, there's a lot of people out there that we would love to sign with, but unless they're going to be at a convention where we can come in with just a smaller amount of items, it may not happen. But yet, you know, you take a look at some of these conventions like the Hollywood Show, they get some random 80s, 70s and 60s guys and girls that you're never going to see anywhere else. And luckily, we have witnesses all over the country that we work with. So if we had something and saying, hey, we've got somebody that's going to be going to the Hollywood Show, you know, let us know. We can get some random one-off done that we maybe not could, we couldn't have if we had to go to them and do an actual private signing.
Now, you've talked about how when you started reading comics, you were a fan of the Transformers. Then you came to the Thunderbird Hotel conventions that I used to run and Joe used to help. And what are your fondest memories of those Thunderbird conventions?
You know, my favorite one is that Rich Kozlowski was there. And if anybody knows mm-hmm. who Rich is, he used to draw The Simpsons. And he had
he still works for Archie.
Yep, correct.
And published a book that Joe was deeply in love with, Three Geeks.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
Three Geeks,
which
is a great
how
one.
We got him there. Well, Joe was a big fan of Three Geeks, so we sent him a note saying, hey, do you want to come to this convention?
Mm-hmm.
And he was shocked that anybody knew who he was, so sure. Yep.
So if you remember, he would draw any Simpsons character as any superhero. You guys remember that?
Yes.
So I had him draw Homer as Wolverine and Larry as, I think it was Larry, why am I drawing a blank? The drunk. Barney.
Barney.
So he drew Barney as the Hulk and they were fighting over a can of Duff beer. It's on the wall in my office. It's the first piece of commissioned art that I ever got done. And to this day, it's still one of my favorite pieces. And the funny thing was fast forward at least 10 years, if not a little bit more, I'm at San Diego Comic-Con and a friend of mine, Rich, had a booth there. And lo and behold, Rich is at his table because they did some work together. And I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. You know, so it's funny because when you go to enough conventions, you see a lot of the same people. It's like this small family, especially the people that set up as vendors and creators and things like that.
Small family. Lou Ferrigno goes to the reunion of every time.
Well, he's the uncle that, you know, that just shows up randomly. Funny thing about Lou, everybody's got a Lou Ferrigno story, but he's actually the godfather of a very good friend of mine's kid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So my buddy Tim used to rep Adam West and Burt Ward, and he worked with a bunch of the smaller cast from Superman. He's one of the biggest Superman collectors. In fact, there was a TV show years ago, I think it was called Toy Hunters, and he was on it as one of the, he had the biggest, at the time, biggest Superman collection in Texas. And So he got to know Lou from bringing Margot Kidder and all these other people to these small conventions back before they were really a big thing, and got to know him. And so I've had breakfast with Lou many, many times, and you know, some people like him, some people don't, you know, but he's definitely a character, that's for sure.
And Virgil shows up anywhere they'll let him put a table.
Yep. Yeah. There's a lot of people that really they that's how they, you know, make a little bit of their living now. So some of these guys that were, you know, actors in the 80s or some of the old wrestlers. And, you know, there's a lot of the comic book artists that go to a lot of these conventions, and it's a large percentage of their income.
Joe, did you have any other questions?
I could just sit and like, what was Lee Majors like? Because he's kind of like I missed him at one of the cons he came to, because I always wanted to tell him, you know, everybody nowadays is, you know, so they want to be Black Panther, they want to be Captain America, they want to be Spider-Man, they want to be Superman, Batman. I ran around the neighborhood in slow motion.
Yep. Me too. You know, he was a nice guy. I met him, it was last year at Salt Lake City Comic Con. He and his wife, Faith, were there. I think I got 60 or 70 items done for some of my customers, and I got some extra ones done. And, you know, he's a super nice guy. Speaking
yeah,
of Black...
I might buy one of those on your website, so I may be buying that later.
Contact me directly.
Excellent.
So speaking of Black Panther, you know, the sad news that happened last week on Friday, you know, we were actually supposed to sign with Chadwick in early July. We had a signing set up, and he got sick in June, and the signing obviously got postponed. So from all we knew, you know, we didn't, you know, it's not my, you know, business to call his agent and say, hey, what's going on with him? You know, everybody thought he had COVID-19, and, you know, he had been on, I think at Instagram, and people were saying something about his weight, and people thought he was losing weight for a role. You know, nobody knew, you know, what was going on. So unfortunately, that signing never happened. And, you know, the funny thing was, and I kind of talked to you about this, is that I met Chadwick a couple different times. I met him at San Diego a couple of times. And the first time I ever met him, he was doing a signing at the Marvel booth. And I know the people that run the Marvel booth. And I had this pen that was a silver pen that he really, really liked. And he basically said, hey, can I borrow that for the signing? I'm like, yeah, sure. You know what? Yeah, that's not a problem. So he's borrowing it for the signing, and they had to rush him off stage when it was done. So he basically stole my pen. Every time after that, every time I met him after that, he remembered me and remembered that. In fact, the second time he met, he's like, hey, do you have any more of those pens that I like so much? I said, well, you know, it's funny. I just so happened to have one, and I pulled one out of my back pocket. I said, but you know, you stole the last one from me. He goes, I never gave it back to you. And I said, no, they rushed you off the stage. So anyways, I actually got a picture of him at San Diego. It's on my personal Facebook page, but I posted a picture of it with him and this story about how, you know, he always remembered me about that. And unfortunately, you know, with his untimely passing, you know, I really wanted to bust his balls this time and just say, hey, you know, this time I brought enough pens and you can have as many as you want.
I was just saying, bring it here. I brought these specifically for you. And then take one out and say, now don't take this one.
Yeah. So you know, honestly, after everything I've read and everything I've seen on TV and everything about this guy, you know, it just seems every time I met him, super nice, you know, and obviously somebody taken way, way too early and really affects a lot of people. You know, not only, you know, is he in a big force in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but when you have young African-Americans that can finally see themselves up on TV and things like that, and just a hero to kids all over the world and stuff like that, it's really sad. And, you know, I have a lot of customers that are just, you know, it doesn't matter that they didn't get the signature. It's more the fact that somebody like that, you know, isn't with us anymore. So, you know, I've gotten a chance to meet a lot of people over the last couple of years. You know, I've signed with Carrie Fisher a number of times, and then she passed away, and Herb Trimpe a number of times. And I've gotten to meet some of my idols. I'm really glad I did before they were taken too early. And that's probably the biggest thing about this job that I enjoy, is just that I get to live as I'm a little kid at work every day. So,
but one more time before we break into our sponsors, give us your eBay, your website. What's the best way to check your stuff out?
Yep. So eBay, it's Twin Cities Comics. If you just go up to the top, it's ebay.com/str/Twin Cities Comics. We're on Facebook under Twin Cities Comics, on Instagram, Twin Cities Comics. I think we're on Twitter, but it's comics_TC. Some comedian from the Twin Cities has that one or something, the handle that we wanted.
Or just put Al Pacino signed CGC, yep. And I guarantee
yep.
one of your signed comics would pop up in the search engine.
Yep.
And from there, you can look at everything.
That's true. And if anybody has any questions for us, the best way to get hold of us is email. Email is sales@TwinCitiesComics.com. And, yeah, if you follow our website, TwinCitiesComics.com, on the bottom of every page, there's a sign-up form, so you can sign up for our mailing list. And that's where we let everybody know when we're going to be doing conventions or private signings. So if there's somebody that you're looking for, just keep an eye out. And when we're at a convention, you can look at the guest list and, who knows when we might see that you might want something signed by.
I'll ask our artist friend Dan Moore. Hey Dan Moore, are there any conventions coming up in the near future?
No.
You're getting away without talking about. You mentioned that you became a fan when you read the Transformers and then you left. What brought you back to comics? What comic was it where you went, oh, man, I got to know what happens?
Darkness.
Now, was it because you saw the cover, the video game? What was it?
So it was actually, I was working at a mortgage company, 1999, I think it was. And one of the guys, again, Jerry, that, told me about Joe's shop, would go to... I don't even remember which shop he went to on Wednesdays, but he would go get new comics. And one day he came back and I happened to be sitting next to him. And this time he went on his lunch break and he brought them back and he was looking through some stuff. And he was a huge Witchblade fan. And I don't remember if it was Witchblade crossover or what, issue of Darkness it was or whatever. But I was like, oh, what is that? And he's like, oh, so I started reading it. And I thought, oh, my God. So this is a hitman who's kind of like a playboy, but yet he can't live that life because if he impregnates somebody, he's going to die. I'm like, what kind of story is this? So I had to start reading it. So, of course, I that's kind of what got me back into it. I read a couple other books. And what actually got me into dealing in comics was this, is there was a company called J Companies. And they would do what's called a museum edition. It would be like a limited print of 10. And they would take... Witchblade number one or Darkness number two or whatever it was, and they would put an archival cover on the top of it, and it would be stamped and all this stuff. And my buddy Jerry goes on eBay and he buys one for $150.
Remember those.
Yep. And these were limited to, like I said, 10 or maybe even 20 or something like that, but they were pretty low. And I said to him, I said, why don't you call J Companies and see if you can do that, buy it from them. And sure enough, he called them and he bought it for $75. And I'm thinking, well, I want to do that because I wanted one of the Darkness ones. So what I did is I called J Companies and I bought two of whatever museum edition it was that I can't remember which one it was. And I bought them for $150 for two of them. And I put one on eBay for $150 and sold it. And I got mine for free. And that's how I became a dealer.
Well, there you go. There are other people who do dealing, too. These guys, our sponsors. Believe it or not, kids, this here podcast has sponsors. And that sponsor, since day one, is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a website, head on over to DreamHost.com, put in code CRAZY, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year. Now, if you would like to advertise here on any of the Solitaire Rose Network podcast, you can just email me at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Also, head on over to eBay and look for user Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, that's Joe Crazy Writer, who's always telling us about the eBay in every episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. If you would like to contact us, you can do so. You can give us a call at 952-856-0519. Leave a message and we'll play it on the show. Or you can send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. Now, I don't do any dealing, but I do a lot of podcasts. And last night, two nights ago, was the...
Three nights ago.
No, it was two nights ago, because normally pay-per-views are on a Saturday, on a Sunday.
As we record this.
But All Elite Wrestling is on a Saturday. So Saturday, I did full coverage of All Elite Wrestling All Out, as well as an audio with Mike Johnson over at PWInsiderElite.com, so you can see what we thought of the pay-per-view. I do that every week. And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No. Not where he draws all over a copy of Red Sonja because he thinks she's not wearing enough clothing.
See, we're not going to do rhymes with Corey. Corey. Story. Allegory. Tory. Montessori.
No, we'll just stick with rhymes with Joe, as in schmo.
No. Mexico.
Joe, what's going on eBay's?
Did you know I've been selling on eBay's for 25 years?
Good Lord, we're old.
I know, and eBay sent me a note. They said, my eBay journey, fun first, big wins, and memories made together. They said, I joined on June 21st, 1998. My first purchase, you get a kick out of this one, PlayStation PSX games on PC, Kinect sticks, which I bought sometime in 2002.
Did you ever use it?
I probably didn't. Oh. Apparently, my first sale was Jade Number 4 variant cover. Starts $1, no reserve, because, again, back then eBay did tons of auctions. Near as I can tell, I think that was Jade Warriors. Hang on a second. That was from Image. They're Dave Campitti and Mike Diodato. Did a series, and I think it says number 4, but there's only 3 issues, so I don't really know what issue I sold, but that's what they're saying my first sale was. My first app purchase was in 2013, where I bought Marcio Doug's Supergirl drawing pinup. My first offer was a Civil War X-Men number 1 from Turner Aspen exclusive. Remember, they used to do a lot of those special things. That was back in 2006. In 2007, my first watched item was a Jim Mooney Superman art print, which I believe I bought. So I know the highest thing I ever sold was my partner Pat Gruber's Amazing Fantasy 15. The sad story with that, when he bought it as a kid for... I think $1,500. You know, he was expecting to be able to sell it upwards of $30,000, $40,000. It came back restored with that dreaded purple cover.
Purple label of death.
Yeah, which I believe they've discontinued.
No, but they still have it. They have now. They have a restored, and they also have a conserved label.
Well, unfortunately, I was only able to get about $5,000 for Pat on that one. So he's very bitter, and of course, the guy he bought it from passed away. So. It's if you go back to the old Joe podcast, I have a interview with Pat there. He talks about it, and you can still tell the who can blame him? You know, he's like, you don't do that to a kid. I know for the longest time I sold tons of stuff at 99 cents. My best part was there was a guy in France who would buy anything that didn't sell, and then I would box them up once a month and send it off to him.
Gotta love people like that.
Oh, I did. Eventually, I just lost track with them. Nowadays, I don't do a lot of auctions. Everything I got's on my eBay page, though. I was there early, so I got a cool name. Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. And I've been just putzing through stuff. Pretty much that's kind of what I do on my days off, is I just look for things to eBay. I'm still trying to figure out which items I'm going to keep. For example, I just ran across a run of Penny for Your Soul, which was from Big Dog Inc. in 2010. Some of those variants are real expensive. Sometimes I get real frustrated because I have my what was that Archie book with Sabrina that kind of disappeared after issue 8?
Oh, the
Chilling Adventures.
Yes, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Well, for some reason, I couldn't find my issue number 8. I got 1 through 7, and they're all individually very expensive. Don't worry, I did find a number 8. And you can always go right to the page and see what other things I've found that I put on the eBay. Not to mention, by the time this here podcast drops, you're going to have one day to look at my special 50% off sale that I'm running, you know, which is why you should be looking all the time. And as you know, as a listener of this here show, let me know when you buy something, and I'll toss in, let's just see if I reach over here. Oh, remember those little goofy pamphlets you'd find on bus stops that told you you were going to hell?
Hot chick tracks.
Yeah. I got two, the Passover plot and the Last Generation. I could throw those in, or maybe this copy of DV8 number 6. I have no idea why I have a copy of DV8 number 6. I never read it.
There's a copy that was hot for about a minute and a half.
Yeah. It could be. I don't know. But, you know, I just like to do that. 90% of it's free shipping. If it isn't, I'll make sure you get it that way. As I always say, come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I spend my entire time off drinking bourbon on the couch and watching Curiosity Stream.
He can't
get
on anymore. I've seen his lawn. It's really bad. Kids won't even play on it.
Well, I gave it away to the neighbors. It's all their fault. No, it's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Tori touched on it. I don't know why, but I'm really, really freaking on the death of Chad Boseman. I don't know what it is. I mean, celebrities die all the time. It could be because he's young, could be because he died of colon cancer, because nobody knew it. I mean, you go watch some of the stunts he pulled. It's hard to tell when you watch a movie what he did versus what CGI, but he did a lot of his own stunt work. People didn't know he had colon cancer, the surgery, the chemotherapy. Kudos to Disney, ABC. I was just flipping around in a stupor on Sunday night, and they were running Black Panther, and I flipped on. Now, I got it on DVD. I got Disney Plus. I can watch it whenever I want. But what occurred to me as I was watching it, they did not put any commercials in it. They ran it commercial free.
Did you watch after the fact when they did the it was haunting a little bit, because, like you said, nobody knew. I mean, Ryan Coogler, who, you know, directed Black Panther, had no idea. You've got today, you know, people have been talking about Michael B. Jordan having a really hard time with this. You know, he had no idea. You know, so to have him go through that struggle, to have him, you know, how many movies, 5, 6 or whatever during that time, to go to the St. Jude's Children's Hospital while he's going through his own cancer and there for the kids. You know, I started crying when they had him up there with the rest of the Black Panther cast, and they were talking about two young kids who had terminal cancer that were trying to hold off to watch this movie, and he just had to stop. And, you know, if I would have seen that a couple years ago, I would have been like, oh, that's touching, you know, the kids. And now it just brings a whole new dynamic and what he had to be going through when he's witnessing these kids at St. Jude's and he's going through the same struggle. It's, yeah.
And it's, this is real. Corey and I talk about this every time a celebrity dies or somebody dies, you know, you personalize it, like how it affects me. And it's just something about when he came out of that magical circle in Avengers Endgame, you were kind of like, okay, we kind of knew it was the last hurrah for Robert Downey and Chris Evans. And we didn't know how, and which is great, because one of the blessings I got last year is I was able to see that with no spoilers.
Amen, me too.
Oh, and I mean, that scene always gets me, because you're like, okay, he's going to be kind of the vanguard now of the Marvel universe going forward, and now he's not.
Yeah.
And in true stupid internet fashion, you've got idiots. Here's how you can tell. I'm trying not to swear, even though we do get explicit ratings. Some idiot has no idea about Black Panther, because they're already bitching that about what's the sister's name? Shira?
Shuri.
Thank you. I can't read my own writing here. Oh, she's going to be Black Panther. That's just wrong. They need to recast. It's like, us comic fans are all standing up. She already was the Black Panther.
Yeah.
This would actually make sense. Oh, well. Work-wise, I'm kind of bumming. We're doing our annual bid again. And really, Tori, you've been safe going through TSA checkpoint because I've been underground in baggage. Keep laughing no longer. After 18 years, and as we're recording today, I'm beginning my 19th year with TSA. They've cut back in baggage, and they're forcing a lot of us on the checkpoint.
I'm not flying out MSP anymore. Sorry.
I have no effing. Well, it's so weird because, you know, yeah, there was a spike up in travel, but I think it's going back down, especially now that we're heading into school season and whatever. I don't see traffic recovering until next year sometime. They've got tons of people on checkpoint. Why they're pulling people out of baggage and forcing us to go to checkpoint? The sad thing is that all of us being moved out of checkpoint are higher seniority. So now they're going to push all the people in bags into crappier schedules. I don't know. I hear why, but it's kind of like, you know, I've been in bags 18 years. I've got 5 freaking years to retirement. And now I have to go to checkpoint. I've been on checkpoint. It's not like I'm not scared of going. It's just, I don't know. So I'll be bitching about that later on. I did discover why I cannot find a copy of Legion of Superheroes number 6. Apparently, it's the first appearance of the Golden Lantern. And prices have gone insane, even on the second print. I mean, first prints are like $20-$30. And there's been a second print. I haven't seen any on the shelf, but I did find somebody did finally hook me up. So that's kind of I will finally get to read it. So what happened, Tori, is for some reason my whole comic order in February was never placed. So I've been running trying to fill in the holes, which I still do that to this day. I got a long box of stuff of things like, how the hell did I miss the last issue of that series? And of course, now without cons coming up, it's just a lot. It's a little tougher to try to fill the holes. And, you know, eBay's not bad, but, you know, anytime you got to add on $3-$4 for shipping on a dollar comic, it's not really worthwhile. And something that I guess it doesn't really freak me out. It's just kind of weird. I just deleted over 100,000 pictures on my computer. Memes, duplicates. Just things that and that was just one folder. I don't even know how many. The stuff's like dust. It just gathers up.
Did you go through and individually click on those, or how did you figure out which ones you wanted to keep and which ones you wanted to delete?
I just said there is no.
I haven't touched it in 5 years. I'm going to get rid
hell,
of it.
Exactly. There's no way in hell I'm ever going to go through all 10,000 pictures. And at most of personal pictures, I may lose a personal picture here and there, but most of my stuff I've already got backed up on various portable hard drives ad nauseum. And I'm just like, you know what? Just be gone. Half hour. It took a half hour to get rid of all of them. just a lot. That's what I'm freaking on. Tori, what you freaking on?
I tell you what, man, Chadwick Boseman, it's
so harsh.
I was watching Black Panther when I got the first text. My girlfriend's daughter had a friend over, and her friend said, "Hey, you know, let's watch a movie." And they're down here, and I was doing some work in the background, and she goes, "Let's watch Black Panther." And my ears perk up. I mean, this girl's, you know, 10 years old, and she wants to watch Black Panther. I'm like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." I'm like, and I'm like, "Yeah, go ahead. I'll have it on in the background." And 10 minutes into the movie, my girlfriend's daughter goes, "Isn't this the guy that you're going to have the signing with?" I said, yep, that's why we've been packing up and getting everything ready and everything. So, yep. And the other girl goes, "Whoa, you get to meet Chadwick Boseman?" I said, "Yeah, we're going to get some stuff signed by him." And I don't know, 20, 25 minutes later, my phone goes off, and it's my buddy Tim, and he goes, "Did you just hear about Chadwick Boseman?" And that's all it said. And I'm like, "Oh God, he's went back into the hospital or something like that, you know, since he was sick, and that's why it got postponed." And I open it up and it says he died. I'm like, what? I'm thinking, was he in a car accident? What happened? So I pull it up and I Google it and it said cancer. And I'm thinking, oh, okay. It's an internet joke. It's a bad joke or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm thinking too when I saw the Facebook piece popping up.
Yep. You know, and I'm thinking, God, you know, one of these things. It was no joke. And, you know, obviously it affected me a little bit more just because also business wise, but as you know, just as a fan as well. So I'm sitting here just absolutely floored in this. It can't be real. I mean, today even it just doesn't seem real. It doesn't. And, you know, luckily, like I said, as I got to meet him a couple of times, you know, that same shield that I brought to, London to get signed by, Benedict Cumberbatch. I got Chadwick to sign it at San Diego in 2018. It's, I don't know, maybe five shields in the world that have his signature on. So I'm blessed in that fact that I got to meet the guy before his untimely passing, and that I've got that. That's never going to leave my, you know, my side anyways. But yeah, I tell you what, it's heart-wrenching. And to watch that tribute that they had to him, it's the only thing that I can say is that the guy was, you know, taken way, way too soon. So other than that, you know, me being a convention geek, you know, it's just every week it seems like there's another convention, you know, that's getting canceled and postponed till next year. And I'm just waiting for 2021 to come, and hopefully some of the comic book business and stuff gets back to a semblance of normalcy. Corey, what do you got?
I just want to say, with everyone else, the passing of Chadwick Boseman was a shock. The fact that he and his family kept it from everyone while he continued to do the stuff he did is pretty amazing in today's world, because it feels like we know everything about everybody. But I think the reason why it resonates so much is he kind of understood the shoes he was stepping into. Don McGregor, who wrote the best Black Panther stories of the 70s, and is, in my mind, associate, even while Jack Kirby created Black Panther and Wakanda, Don McGregor's the one who fleshed it out, who kind of made it into what we saw on screen. Talked about how the few times he got to talk with him, Chadwick talked about how he read what Don McGregor wrote, knowing that he was going to be more than just a movie role. This was going to be very powerful for a lot of people. And he took that responsibility seriously. It wasn't like, okay, this is just another part. It's, I'm going to be the first major Black superhero in a big budget movie. And he knew his parts coming in the future films. Which is why it's just amazing that he did so much for kids and community, knowing that it would place a toll on him, but also knowing the expectation he was putting on himself for being that. It's like with Jackie Robinson, who Jackie Robinson wasn't the greatest baseball player, but he understood the weight of what he did, and he could carry the responsibility of kind of being not just a role model, but an expectation for everyone. And Chadwick Boseman kind of did the same thing. And I think that's one of the reasons why he's hitting all of us so hard. We thought of him as more than an actor. We didn't think of him as, you know, a superhero, but we thought of him in much the same way when Christopher Reeve did Superman, that he was going to kind of uphold that in his personal life as well. The other stuff I have is unbelievably trivial. If you look at the fall TV schedules, boy, it's a lot of reality shows and game shows and nothing scripted, and who cares? For the past few years, there's kind of been fall TV isn't really the big deal. It's later on. But man, it's like, oh, look, they've got a reality show on CBS that's going to be on 5 days a week. Why? They got to fill time. And they can't feel anything scripted. And CBS, oh, here's another reality show. And it's, yeah, if I wanted to watch that crap, it's on cable all the time. So, meh. I wonder when the COVID's going to hit Netflix, because, man, I wish Netflix would slow down a bit. I looked at my to-watch queue today because, hey, I have time to watch TV. And it's like, I just felt utterly overwhelmed. If I just did nothing for the next year, I might get caught up on my Netflix queue. Marvel Unlimited is a service I absolutely love and I recommend constantly. But boy, the last month or so, they have not been putting up any older stuff. Even some of the older stuff they said they would hasn't been showing up. And I don't know why that is. You know, they're still, they've actually gotten past the point where Marvel wasn't putting anything out except digital books. So they're getting the books that started coming out in May. But usually they drop in 5 to 10 older things that have been digitized but haven't been put up. And they haven't done any of that, which that's the stuff that I dive into because it's like, ooh, you know, older stuff from the 60s and 70s I haven't read. Hopefully they're going to be getting some of the – they've got some new Golden Age omnibuses coming out. So So hopefully they get some of that stuff up there. I read The Three Jokers, and I will talk about the comic in Geeking, but in Freaking, the book is out of continuity, in Black Label, blah, 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 even though the start of the story was a huge part of Rebirth. And Geoff Johns, oh, this is, you know, this is the big continuity change for Batman, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's 4 years later, so the book is 2 years late, and everything in it's out of continuity now. And it makes me think, does DC, you know, one of the things that works for Marvel, they have a 5-year plan. Every year, they all get together. Everybody pitches, you know, for what they're going to be doing for the next 5 years. And because they revisit it, it's okay. You said that for this year, you were going to do this, this, and this. Is that still going to work? Are we still going to do that? So they plan out for 5 years, but they allow for revision. DC, they don't seem to be planning jack or shit, and it shows. Because, oh, here's this big revelation that now doesn't matter at all. Here's all these story threads that we dropped in Justice League that don't matter at all. Here's all this stuff from Rebirth that now doesn't make any sense because Doomsday Clock's out of continuity and... It's another reason why some of us longer-term comic fans just look at DC and go, why bother? You know, if they start a story, it's going to be like WWE, where they're eventually going to get to the point where it's like, meh, nobody cares. Finishing stories, that's for nerds. And then the last thing I am geeking on, I pulled out some of my essentials. I picked up the Iron Man Essential. Now, when you think of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which, you know, is very important for people who get signatures, the first Iron Man movie was the one that kicked everything off and was really good, and I hadn't read the first Iron Man stories in probably a good 15, 20 years. They are so goddamn awful. They're just terrible. If they're not knocking off something that they had done in the Fantastic Four or Hulk, it's introducing a new character. Like, their version of Doctor Strange was the most stupid, insipid villain I've seen outside of a Harvey superhero comic from the 60s. It made the Dell Dracula comic, where Dracula was a superhero who would climb up on chairs to scare people. I'm not joking. It made that seem more realistic. These first 10 stories were just awful. And Happy Hogan and Pepper Potts, their introduction, ham-fisted and painful. Pepper Potts is mooning over Tony Stark and bitchy to all other human beings. Happy Hogan is a punch drunk former boxer who tends to screw up everything he touches. Why Tony Stark would hire either of them, I have no idea. They're not interesting. They're not fun. They don't add anything to the story. The only good thing about it is you've got some Jack Kirby inked by Don Heck, which is beautiful work. Don Heck's lines with Kirby's outlines are fantastic because Kirby was, you know, very much into action, while Don Heck was a illustrator. He was very much, when you look at Don Heck's stuff, a lot of people call it boring. He wasn't made for superheroes, but people wearing regular clothes, doing regular things, very illustrative, almost better than Buscema when it comes to that, especially when he's inking himself. I've talked about Don Heck a lot and how he got the reputation by the 80s of being Marvel's most boring artist. He wasn't. He just was not made for superhero books. And on Iron Man, it really shows, because anytime Iron Man's on the page, you're like, ugh, make it stop. Make it stop. Joe, what are you geeking on?
I'm sorry, you lost me when you started talking about DC Comics. What are we doing?
Geeking.
Geeking. Oh, well, I'm geeking that Tori's not upset that I thought he would tell you what. And Chad kept my pen after all these years. I'll never get it back. No, seriously, I love that story. You told me that story on a text, and I was almost in tears. I mean, that was probably the first time. You know, especially after seeing the ABC thing about him, where, you know, going to visit the kids in the cancer ward. I mean, that brought a smile to my face. I thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Last week I got to go up north for a bit. You know, I love going up north. Corey, guess how many comic books I bought?
None.
Exactly. And you want to know why?
Your wife wouldn't let you go in a comic shop.
No.
What?
Well, apparently every comic store in Duluth is closed on Sunday. Now, I knew Collector Connections was because they always stay closed on Sunday because of football. But I think it's Rocket Comics. Downtown Duluth was closed. And even next store to Collector Connection, the Toy Galaxy, they were closed. I'm like, is that like a city mandate? Everybody's closed on Sunday? I wish it was amazing. So anyway, the other thing was, is there's that place up in Grand Marais, that kind of a secondhand artsy store where somebody in there is selling comic books and they know what they're doing because they're priced what they should be. Again, you're not going to find any deals, but it's always fun to look. They were closed on Monday. So, and when we went home a different route, so I wasn't able to get to Duluth. So it was fun to go up north again, just to relax and do pictures and stuff. I'll probably talk more about that or not. I don't know. We did do the State Fair food crawl yesterday, which was a lot of fun. Normally I'm getting, you know, my Facebook memory, all sorts of feeds about, oh yeah, this was you at State Fair a couple years ago. And I didn't go last year, but it's kind of a thing. I like to go with friends because it's kind of like, you know, you start at one end at a fairgrounds and you drink your way to the other end. And I was able to score the first of all, for those of you not knowing what the hell I'm talking about, Minnesota State Fair is run by its own little, well, Nick used to call it the Mafia. Nick Post, the guy who's He said, yeah, when they come around at midnight to collect their fair share, you better have it ready for them. Anyways, they canceled the fair due to COVID, but they made this State Fair food crawl where they had 16 vendors and they did a line and you stayed in your car. And as you're waiting in line, you sign off what you want. You tell the person, takes the order, you pull forward, they get you the order. On the way through, the first thing we ate, because everybody was starving, because, you know, nobody, you don't eat when you're going because you know you're getting food, was like a place that served turkey. Oh, and we should have each gotten a turkey sandwich, except Holly, who's, you know, vegetarian. Because we just, you know, Chris and I tried to split it, and we're like, okay, here's your half. You're going to finish that? we got all the way up to about the Pronto Pups, and then we were like, oh, okay, there's one disadvantage about doing this as you're driving up to everywhere is that you're not walking it off. You know, at the fair, you get, you're there for however many hours, and you eat something, you walk it off, you eat some more, walk it off. But the people towards the end, they started giving you things not only in containers, but in bags. And one of the things they said was to bring a cooler with you. So we, you know, got a steak sandwich. We brought some cheese curds. We brought some potato things, wings, drummies. I mean, and of course, the Sweet Martha cookies. We were limited to three buckets, but we only did three. Or six, I should say. We only did three. I was kind of a little bitchy person because towards the end, they had a place where you turn off to get your state fair bling. And we passed it. And I said, I want my bling. We get it online. It's not the same. And so we turned around and I went and I got my bling. So I'm happy now. I usually get a little pin. And I got this button that's hang in there, Minnesota. Minnesota State Fair 2020. Oddly enough, if you want to go get the bling, you can. When you drive in, there's a specific spot you got to stop, and they check in to make sure you have a ticket. If you don't have a ticket, then you have to exit because tickets have been sold out forever. So that was a lot of fun. Unless you think we're talking about everything but comics, a couple things I mentioned. I finished up reading the Dreadstar Omnibus. This is all the Jim Starlin run. You can go to Jim Starlin's page. I imagine jimstarlin.com, and still buy these omnibuses. It was a good story. I mean, the story up until the main fight was fun, and then when he became the space cop towards the end, you're kind of like, but it worked. And he set everything up really well. They have not done a Peter David omnibus yet. They're thinking about it, but I have them all. And I've never read the Peter David one, so I'm really looking forward to pulling those out and reading those. A friend of mine dropped off a copy of Mad number 15, the October 2020 edition, because it's super spoofer heroes issue. Get it? And it's got stuff from like 1963. It's got Sergio. It was a lot of fun. And it's got some newer stuff that I hadn't seen before. And they have a really, really nice, I suppose I had it marked and now it's not here. It's called the Weinsheim Museum for Mort Drucker. And just talking about that, you know, he passed away. And then, of course, they go right into his adaptation of Teen Rage, Moolah, Nitwit, Turtles 2, The Secret is to Snooze. So that was kind of fun. Let's see. Other things I read after all these years. I missed issues. For some reason, when I bought Dawn Vampirilla all the way back in, I believe was it 2004, it was written and illustrated by Joseph Linsner. I didn't get issue 5. I'm sorry, 2014. Well, I finally found an issue 5, and I was able to read it. And it's an okay story, kind of heady. It fits well with the Dawn mythos, and it's Joseph Michael Linsner doing what he does best, just beautiful art, beautiful women. Corey, have you ever read She Psyblade?
No, she was a book that never really jumped out at me. I tried a couple issues, and it was very much, this is very pretty with no story.
Okay, you probably want to go find a cheap copy, because first of all, it's a two-parter. One was done by Image, and one was done by Crusade. The Image part was Psyblade She, which was basically a fight between Psyblade and She. The only problem is they're not from the same world. Now, the reason you want to pick up She Psyblade is because of the guest stars in it. You've got Archangels. You've got Ash. You've got Bianca. You've got Cascade from Sovereign Seven. You've got a Dark Prophet. You've got Catharsis. You've got Ginny. You've got Glory. You've got Grifter. You've got Hellboy. You've got Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. Hilly Rose, Hellshock, Kabuki, Kid Death, Lethargic Lad, Lothori, Snap the Punk Turtle, Scud the Disposable Assassin, Madman, Megaton Man, Milk and Cheese, The Tick, Tyrant, Wolf and Bird, Ultimate Warrior, Kachu, Kazuntai, you might have guessed, because the both parts are called The Battle for Independence. And
is there a kitchen sink in there somewhere?
It could have been.
No, kitchen sink was out of business by then.
You definitely want to go pick this up, especially if you're a fan of the Independents. Of course, right there, you know, you got Bone, you got Cerebus, you've got Mr. Spook, Gabriel. Yeah. So yeah, the first Cyblade sheet is basically your pretty art setup fight for no reason, and the second part is just a wonderful love story to battle for of independent comics. Circula, let's see, when did this sucker come out? Because some of these characters just ain't being published right now. 1995. So yeah, dig a copy up, or next time we're digging through quarter bins, as we're bound to do, I'll find them for you, because you'll get a kick out of it. I read, you know what, I'm going to save this for next week, because we're getting kind of long in the tooth, and I still got to talk about things that I've watched, because I've been watching a little TV, too. I talked about, on the Disney Channel, they have The Imagineers.
Love it.
Oftentimes, when I watch something on television, I think, could I do that? There is no way I could have ever been an Imagineer. These are the guys who came up with the brainstorm that the Star Wars universe, the Star Wars theme park, wouldn't be just a theme park based on Star Wars. It's part of Star Wars. You are going through an actual planet in the Star Wars universe. It's utterly amazing what these guys came up with when they're allowed to do it. Under Eisner, under Disney, under Roy Disney, under... who's the guy running Disney now? I can't think of his name. Anyways. They come up with just the most brilliant things in how to make Disney the magical place it is. And this five-part series covers the entire making from Disney World. And then they get to the part where they came out with California Adventure. However, the Imagineers were allowed to go back in and reimagine it and make it now someplace that I really want to get to. So if you got Disney Plus, you definitely got to check it out. I talked with Corey about this. I actually watched SmackDown, because I think after the news hit on Friday, I was just brain dead. And I haven't watched wrestling in so long, but they did something that I thought was really interesting. What's it called on SmackDown? The Thunderdome or
Thunderdome? Because wrestling must steal from Mad Max movies.
Oh, of course. And I don't, where is it? Is it down?
What it is, it's at one of the arenas in Florida. They've set it up like they've done with the basketball arena, where they have video screens and fans can basically come in. You know, basically, I don't know if you dial in or whatever. Two things about it. One, the first two nights, they had no problems. The third night, people were putting up there was a guy who put up a picture of Chris Benoit, and someone else put up Ku Klux Klan stuff. So they're having to figure out ways to kind of control what goes up on those screens, because when they first announced it, I don't know, Joe, if you read this, but I said, huh, fans are going to be able to you turn on their webcams and be on TV. I am eventually going to see somebody's butthole.
Yeah. No, but it was interesting. I mean, they piped in the sound, but they've been known to do that anyways. But it was kind of an interesting experience to watch. And the storylines were simple enough, and I've been away from WWE long enough where it was interesting. Not enough to keep me coming back on Fridays, because normally I work Friday nights. Speaking of Netflix, the last season, the fifth season of Lucifer dropped. Look at that. I'm drooling already. Finally, I talked about it, and it's available. If you go to Heroes Initiative, and you can look them up on eBay, they've got their version of Overstreet ready to go. It's a little bit more expensive than if you just buy the regular one. They also have a guy who autographed the art he did. So I bought the autographed version, and it goes for Heroes Initiative for a good reason. So I'll have my guide pretty soon. They mailed it out almost an hour after I ordered it. So that was kind of cool. Tori, what you geeking on? What's got you happy in comics, life, the universe, and everything?
I did the State Fair food tour as well. I gotta say,
did you get the coma?
I got the coma halfway through. You're right. We brought a cooler, we brought waters, we brought everything. And, you know, the whole, my stomach is, or my eyes are bigger than my stomach. Halfway through, I'm like, God, what are we going to do with all this? And the, and like you said, you know, you're in your car, so you can't walk it off. You can't wait. Like, I want to get Sweet Martha's, but, you know, let me wait an hour. Now you can't do that because you're in line and you got to keep moving. We came home with a bunch of stuff, man. Those egg rolls were delicious and the Italian sausage and peppers. And yeah, it was, I don't know about you, but we were online for an hour and a half trying to get those darn things. It was like being on Ticketmaster when Beyonce tickets go on sale or something like that. Or so I heard. I've never been to a Beyonce concert, but yeah, same thing there. What I'm really excited about, and I have it sitting here because I was able to pick it up today because I went into a comic shop that will not be named since I got something ahead of time by a day, but I remember the old Excalibur, and when I saw Marvel Tales Captain Britain, I had to get it. So I'm hoping that it's good. I don't have a lot of big expectations, but I just, I don't know. I'm looking forward to reading that when I'm done here. As for what I'm watching, September 4th is going to be a magical day. On one side, you've got the family-friendly Mulan. On the other side, you got The Boys Season 2. September 4th is going to be glorious. We're going to pay the extra money for Mulan, just because, you know, like everybody, hey, even though Disney is a major conglomerate, they can only lose $5 billion per quarter for so long before they go under. So I like Disney. I'm going to support them. And I'm really looking forward to the Snyder cut of Justice League after watching everything on DC fandom. I watched a lot of what they had going on. Not so much about Batman. We'll see how that goes. But Snyder cut, I don't know. I think this is the Justice League we wanted and the Justice League we need. So there's a lot of stuff coming up here in the next couple of months that we're going to be watching here that I'm pretty stoked for. So, Corey, over to you. What are you
anybody here going to do the Bill and Ted thing?
I don't know what I'm going to do with that one yet.
I think I'll probably do it, but my wife wants to rewatch 1 and 2 because it's been so long since she's seen it. How about you, Corey? Is that up your alley?
I'll watch it, but I'm not going to pay money to watch it if it shows up on one of the 52 streaming services I have.
It's like $20 now to watch it at home for however long, or you can go see it in the theater if there's one open nearby.
The theaters around me have opened, and I'm not going.
Nope.
I'm not going for that, but I might go for Tenet. My buddy saw it and said he loved it. So that one I might. I'm sure that there won't be many people in there, so I'll probably be plenty socially distant, but that's one that I probably want to see in the theater.
Well, what I am geeking on, first off, I'll get the non-comic stuff out of the way. I saw that Marvel has had an update to the video game Fortnite. I do not play Fortnite, although I know a lot of people who do, who are my nieces and nephews and kids of friends of mine. And I am really happy about this because they have been sending me messages via Facebook saying, oh, what's the story behind this character? Where can I find out more about this character? Which is exactly what it's supposed to do. We talk constantly on this show about how comic shops need to reach out. And they don't. They don't advertise. They don't reach out. And they wonder why they don't get new customers. Marvel is really, especially with Disney at the helm, is really pushing to get the word out about the comics. And this is yet another way to let kids who, you know, they've never seen a comic book in the wild to find out about comic books. I also have started binging something. Because I'm on Comcast, I get Peacock TV for free, and I have them on DVD, but I just hadn't had time to do anything, so I'm seeing what's on Peacock. Oh, look, Columbo! And I've started watching one or two episodes every day. They're well-written mysteries. A lot of them are written by people who went on to do better things, you know, like Stephen Bochco, who went on to create Hill Street Blues and NYPD Blue and Cop Rock. You know, Cop Rock, one of the greatest shows ever, right, Joe?
Yeah, Cop Rock. I remember being on college radio and saying, tonight on Cop Rock.
And boy, you know, the first director's a guy who I really thought would have made something of himself. The director of the first episode was Steven Spielberg. So they had
went nowhere.
Yeah, they had some talent. They had some talent.
Hey, now there's a guy you get to sign one of your comics.
Yeah.
I wish.
Have
him and George Lucas.
Oh,
they need a lot of money, right? They need money.
Yeah, they're kind of doing poor things right now.
The other video type thing, News From Me TV over on YouTube. Mark Evanier every Tuesday is interviewing someone. I just watched the Steve Sherman episode. He and Steve were Kirby's assistants when Kirby went to DC. If you want to know about Jack Kirby, that's an hour and a half that you have to watch. There's also a great episode where we had an episode where Mark Evanier interviewed Sergio Aragonés that I talked about a few weeks ago. He just did an episode where Sergio interviewed him.
Oh.
Those two should do a video chat every month. They're just, they're magic together when they're talking. It's so much fun. I hold in my hand a book that I thought would never come out. Star Trek, The Unsettling Stars by Alan Dean Foster. This book was actually solicited in 2011, 2012. And then it didn't come out, and it didn't come out. It just came out this year. It is the first of the novels based in the Kelvin universe. Joe, what's the Kelvin universe?
That's where they tell temperature instead of in Fahrenheit, they use it in Kelvin. No, wait. That's Kelvin and Hobbes, right? The guy who has the imaginary tiger that was in Weapon Brown, the graphic novel.
It's the movies. And
what?
And for some reason, they solicited two books based on the movies, and then they didn't come out and were pulled from the schedule. Well, they just came out this year. The second one is David Mack's More Beautiful Than Death, which David Mack has written, a wheelbarrow full of Star Trek books. Not the David Mack who does Kabuki, although they do know each other, and the David Mack who does Kabuki has done covers for David Mack, the author's Star Trek books.
But you won't be on the next episode of.
But one cool thing, Alan Dean Foster, I didn't realize this until recently because Gene Roddenberry's dead, so people are actually saying what they wrote for him. While everybody thinks that the first Star Trek movie was written by Gene Roddenberry, the plot was actually from Alan Dean Foster. Echoes back to it in this book. Because, what would happen with the Voyager probe in the movie universe? Comic-wise, the third issue of That Texas Blood came out from Image, and it has very quickly become my favorite comic. It is a mystery comic. Oh, I'm going to sneeze again.
Corey's allergic to good comics.
Time's a charm.
You should see him with Deathmate.
He's got a puke! He's got a puke!
No, I'm allergic to good comics. When Deathmate came out, it was perfectly fine.
Hid behind the stack of Deathmate Red that I couldn't sell and just, you know, kept yourself nice and toasty warm.
Yes, whenever those Vertigo books would come in, I'd hide behind the Deathmate. it is... no good slimy scumbag. He turns up dead in a small Texas town, and his brother, who got away years ago, comes back to kind of wrap up his affairs and discovers that, of course, there's more than meets the eye. It's set in modern times, but it's a noir thriller. Oh my God, it is so good. The author says it's going to run about 30 issues. They're up to issue 3, and I am completely, totally, and utterly hooked. And it's one of those books that 10 years ago couldn't have come out because it's a crime story. It's a mystery. It's deliberately paced. There's nothing in the way of fight scenes, nothing in the way of mysticism, nothing fantastic. It's very much a crime story. And I am old enough to remember when you couldn't even mention that a book was a crime comic and be approved by the Comics Code. Now we're getting kind of a mini boom in crime comics. And the last comic I am going to say that I liked is one that I mentioned earlier in the show, and that is Three Jokers. It is a DC Black book way back in the beginning of Rebirth. Superman sat in the Mobius chair, which is the chair that
Metron.
Metron sits in, and it has to do with the New Gods. But when he sat in it, he saw that there wasn't one Joker, there wasn't two Jokers, there were three Jokers. And we'll explore that in an upcoming miniseries. Well, 4 years later, the miniseries is out. And it explores this idea that there are three Jokers. There's the comedian Joker, there's the crazy Joker, and there's the criminal Joker. And it ties in very deeply with the Killing Joke. You could tell that the first issue was written before it was pulled out of continuity, because it really hits on a lot of continuity points that he's streamlining. But the most important thing is the art by Jason Fabok, F-A-B-O-K. He's done some Batman stuff over the years.
Speaking of Jason Fabok, good buddy of mine. Love his run on Detective, but I've not read the Three Jokers yet. Have you?
I don't even know if I ordered it. Oh. I mean, I have my comic orders here. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, I did order it.
It's on
I'm probably waiting.
Hello.
Oh, you're still back. There. We're here.
Yeah, we're waiting patiently.
Come on.
Now?
Yep.
Okay, good. So just a fantastic book. Three issue miniseries. Let's see, it's $6.99 each. The thing is, if in the next previews they're gonna be soliciting the hardcover for it, so you may want to just wait and buy it.
Yeah.
But you said that you know him.
Jason is repped by some friends of mine that own Comic Sketch Art. I've known Jason for a couple years, and I actually have some of his original art. I have one of his covers that he did, and just an amazing artist. One of those good old Canadian boys.
How long has he been working on this book, do you know?
That I don't know. I don't.
That would be something interesting, because the level of detail on this art is, it's very Brian Boland in the level of detail he has in his art. So if it was delayed because of his art, it's worth it. And that is what I am geeking on. Believe it or not, kids, you have listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
And don't think we don't appreciate it.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
You know, Corey, I'm going to give you a treat. No dad joke, but Tori, one last time, let our listeners know where they can find all that stuff that I've been drooling over for the last hour.
TwinCitiesComics.com, Twin Cities Comics on all of our social media. And like you said, if you can't find us on eBay, look up Al Pacino CGC 9.8 Scarface. You'll find us.
Oh, yeah. God, you can know he's the only one that's got it. Corey, there's only one thing left to do. Hit my music.
Done, bitches!